Welcome to Plural Space, Conversations in Lung Cancer. Our new 12-part limited series is Lung Cancer 201, Expanding Horizons, and features the ways clinicians and advocates across the care continuum are taking lung cancer care and control to new heights. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Plural Space, Conversations in Lung Cancer. I'm Hannah Burson with the American Cancer Society National Lung Cancer Roundtable, and today's episode of our Expanding Horizons series focuses on creating screening opportunities and leveraging mammography. I have with me today Dr. Kim Sandler and Dr. Leah Backus. Kim, could you briefly introduce yourself?
Sure. Thanks so much for having me. My name is Kim Sandler. I'm a cardiothoracic radiologist at Vanderbilt in Nashville, and I also serve as the co-chair of the Lung Screening Steering Committee for the American College of Radiology, and I am a member of the National Lung Cancer Roundtable.
Great. Thank you. Leah, could you introduce yourself?
Sure thing. Again, thanks for the invitation to be here. My name is Leah Backus. I'm a professor of cardiothoracic surgery at Stanford University. I work both at Stanford and also at the Palo Alto VA, and I do all things lung cancer related.
Well, thank you both so much for being here. You both are sort of experts in the field that we're talking about today, which is about leveraging mammography. So I was wondering for our first question, if you both could talk about the relationship between mammography and low-dose CT for lung screening.
I'm happy to start. So as a radiologist, I interpret CT scans and chest x-rays. And what I found when looking at CT scans for people who were diagnosed with lung cancer is that as lung cancer screening became available, we were still seeing a lot of diagnoses in people who met the eligibility criteria to be screened, but had not undergone lung screening. So for those who aren't as familiar, we started screening after the National Lung Screening Trial was published, which enrolled over 50,000 individuals and showed a significant benefit in mortality with the detection of lung cancer using annual CT screening. And initially, we recommended lung screening for individuals aged 55 to 80 with a 30-pack year history of smoking, so smoking on average a pack a day for 30 years. In the past couple of years, those guidelines have been modified to now include patients beginning at age 50 and with a 20-pack year history of smoking. So still seeing the majority of these diagnoses in people with a history of tobacco exposure. So what I started to do was look at new lung cancer diagnoses, and I noticed particularly in women, if they were diagnosed with lung cancer, they had not been screened. And unfortunately, without screening, we typically find the diagnosis of lung cancer later because symptoms have developed. But when I looked at the other imaging studies that were performed for these women, I saw that not only had they had one mammogram, but more often they had had decades worth of mammograms, which is great, and were actively engaged in screening for breast cancer. But it seemed that no one had told them the importance of being screened for lung cancer if you meet that eligibility criteria. So that's why I started to do this work. And when I looked at the numbers specifically, we are still working to improve uptake of lung screening. I'd say optimistically about 10 to 15% of those who meet eligibility criteria are being screened. And if you compare that to mammography, 70% of women report having had a mammogram within the past 2 years. So really an enormous opportunity to improve lung screening uptake for women.
So I would add to Dr. Sandler's comments to just say that I personally am really interested in this overlap for a couple of reasons, one of which is the fact that obviously anyone who works with lung cancer patients knows that we've all got to be champions for lung cancer screening and primarily raising awareness both with providers but also with patients. And so whenever I'm giving a talk in the community, for instance, or to students or someone who's not otherwise far down the road in terms of their professional training, I always ask for a show of hands as to who is aware of the various types of cancer screening that's out there. And everyone raises their hand for mammogram for screening for breast cancer. But when you ask about lung cancer screening, that is a small proportion of people who are really even aware of it. And so just looking at that disparity between, you know, the fact that mammography has been around for decades, maybe Dr. Sandler knows more than me, but I don't know, probably almost 50 years now. We've done a whole lot of good there with 70% uptake with eligible women compared to lung cancer. Obviously, lung cancer screening is really in its infancy still, but we can really leverage the lessons learned from streamlining mammography and try to apply that to lung cancer screening. And then the other thing of note, just sort of clinically and anecdotally, as someone who takes care of lung cancer patients, is, you know, as a surgeon, my practice is by and large dominated by patients who have early stage disease, which is a good thing because those are the people for which surgery is most appropriate. But a whole lot of those people wind up being diagnosed with their lung cancer incidentally, which, you know, you would hope most of them would be diagnosed via lung cancer screening, but that's just really not the case. And so we have a whole lot of room to go when it comes to figuring out the ways that we can either capitalize on some of the incidental findings that we see more appropriately, but also, like I said, and like Dr. Sandler said, in leveraging those opportunities to interact with patients, to use them as teachable moments.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think one of the really important things that Dr. Backus mentioned was patients being their own advocates and really raising awareness. Mammography has done a tremendous job in making women their own advocates, women encouraging each other to be screened for breast cancer and bringing it up to their providers and not necessarily having to wait for someone to tell them that this is the right thing to do. So as you mentioned, mammography has been around much longer, but when it was introduced, it was not widely adopted right away. It took a little while for people to start to recognize its importance and why we're doing it and the benefits. So I think we have a lot to learn from the success of mammography and the way that it has been implemented and the way that participants have become their own advocates and have really started to ask for this and to encourage one another to participate in screening.
I think one other thing to mention in there is the fact that women are woefully underrepresented when it comes to people who are presenting for screening for lung cancer as well. So they really do represent a vulnerable population. So not only are rates of lung cancer screening low across the board, but even lower amongst women, which really is somewhat counterintuitive if you consider the fact that women tend to get their health maintenance and get their screenings done. So why is that the case? I think we're still trying to investigate that fully.
Yeah. And if you look at incidence, we know that breast cancer is the most common cancer that's found in women. But if you look at mortality rates, they're much higher from lung cancer than from other cancers in women. So it's almost as if we immediately associate breast cancer with women because the vast majority of patients diagnosed with breast cancer are women. But I think we're almost a victim of the success because we don't even think about lung cancer as a disease of women. And I really consider myself a women's health advocate. I have to thank Dr. Backus for actually supporting our work and being involved and wanting to continue to grow this project to promote lung screening for women through mammography. It was really instrumental in making sure that we got to perform this work. But so much of it is raising awareness of lung cancer as truly a women's health crisis. And it has been the leading cause of cancer mortality for men and women now for decades. And screening has given us, in my opinion, one of the best opportunities to change that dynamic, to change that statistic. Because if we can find lung cancer early, we greatly improve the chance of survival.
And I think that that's the overarching message of the National Lung Cancer Roundtable, right? That's one of the pillars, if you will, is to try to promote lung cancer screening almost by any means necessary. And we're trying to do that clearly. And it's been helpful to have the subgroup of women carved out, if you will, as this vulnerable population, which was the genesis of the Lung Cancer in Women Task Group, for which both myself and Dr. Sandler were on for a number of years and sort of the vehicle through which this project was launched. But it also speaks to the fact that we're really kind of evolving and now the roundtable has shifted towards a broader definition of vulnerable populations such that there's this creation of a new task group for health equity. And so the Lung Cancer in Women Task Group is now going to be shifted underneath the umbrella of the larger task group, which is to be formed now of health equity. And I think speaks to the broader push, if you will, to improve health equity and access to all, but still recognizing the fact that lung cancer and women in general are a very special population. And so interventions aimed at targeting them as a special group need to be tailored. So again, underscores the importance of the work being done here, which is to look at women as this very special population and come up with tailored interventions.
Thank you both for so clearly laying out why it is so important to leverage one screening modality to support another. Could you both talk about how you are doing that work? I know you both have a number of projects related to getting this out there. Could you both talk about them?
I'll start just by saying that the first thing that we needed to do was to prove that this population existed, that there was a significant population of women who were being screened for breast cancer, who met eligibility criteria to be screened for lung cancer, but were not participating in our lung screening program. So the first thing we did was publish a study looking at 3 years worth of data where we identified a population of 250 women who were undergoing mammography and also qualified for lung screening, followed them for a number of years and showed that in that group, we saw more lung cancer diagnoses than diagnoses of breast cancer, even though all of the women were being screened for breast cancer and about a third had undergone lung screening. And we saw a number of deaths from lung cancer and none from breast cancer in that patient population. So we published that paper a few years ago and entitled it "Women Screened for Breast Cancer Are Dying from Lung Cancer." It was really important for us to raise awareness of how important lung screening was. And we only included women who were having mammograms at facilities that offered both breast and lung screening. So really a great opportunity to improve enrollment and facilitate those exams to be performed potentially on the same day. So once we were able to get that data out there, that's when we could start to work with the roundtable, with Dr. Backus and with others to say, not only does this population exist, but we now have an opportunity to reach out to patients, to reach out to their providers and say, you're coming to see us for a mammogram. You also qualify for lung screening. Let us help by sharing information on the importance of lung screening, what that exam entails and why we think it's important. And if you would like to be enrolled, we can do that on the same day. So that was really the origin of the CALM project, combine a lung screening with mammography. And we're working with Dr. Backus and her group at Stanford and also with Dr. Carrie Thompson at Mount Auburn. So trying to implement this outreach in three different screening programs, three different program structures to show that we can be successful in ultimately improving enrollment of women who meet the screening eligibility criteria.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that first paper that was referenced by Dr. Sandler, just demonstrating women dying of lung cancer, but who are otherwise presenting for breast cancer, is really pretty pivotal and incredibly eye-opening. I can recall being at the first National Lung Cancer Roundtable Summit that we had for our task group on lung cancer in women. This is before Dr. Sandler was on that task group, and talking with some of the thought leaders at that time. And of course, me being very naive and a non-radiologist, right? You know, I'm like, well, why can't we just have like the mega scan that just, you know, scans all the body parts, you know, scans the breast, scans the lungs, and answers the question in one fell swoop. And of course, all my colleagues chimed in and disabused me of that notion. But it really did spark the conversation. And of course, shortly thereafter, meeting with Dr. Sandler, I believe Lauren Rosenthal maybe was the first person to make the connection that she's already doing work in this space, was pivotal for me because I hadn't really thought about it with a whole lot of effort. But if you do think about it, there's so many questions that still need to be answered here. Even if you did have a magical way to do both scans in one fell swoop in one examination, is that really what patients want? And what about the heterogeneity of centers in terms of how it is that they organize themselves between mammography and lung cancer screening? What are the logistics involved? What's the patient perspective in terms of fears or concerns, radiation exposure, that sort of thing? All of these questions are still largely unanswered. And I mean, and I keep referencing Dr. Sandler because she's really the one spearheading the effort. You know, I'm one of three sites, but I think that it's important that we apply the same scientific rigor to this area that we do to any and all aspects of medical care and research to get the questions answered and not put the cart before the horse. You know, like we've got to make sure that we do it right so that we can come up with the optimal intervention, but that's also going to be right-sized and tailored to institutions and to the target population.
I completely agree. And I think that by doing our work at three different sites, and I mentioned the different program structures, our program is a highly centralized program that's run through radiology. And I believe Dr. Backus mentioned the word champion earlier in our discussion. It's so important to have a champion for lung screening at each individual site and at each individual program. But that individual can come from anywhere, be it radiology, thoracic surgery, pulmonary medicine, patient advocacy. It does not have to be run through any specific department. But because the programs are all structured very differently, be it centralized or a decentralized program structure or a hybrid program where maybe radiology is working with other centers, I mentioned the work of Dr. Thompson, and she's a pulmonologist, and then the program at Stanford that has a lot of input from surgery. It's wonderful to see how the different implementation strategies are used and what has been most effective, because what's right for our program is not necessarily right for another program, but the outcome of improving enrollment of women who can greatly benefit from lung screening by suggesting or educating at the time of mammography has been successful at each of our sites. And so to me, it really showed that as we move forward, we can't have a one-size-fits-all approach. We really need a collection of different strategies and a way to bring that to other programs to say, these are the different opportunities. These are the different ways that you can engage with providers and patients, ultimately to achieve our goal of increasing the number of lung cancer survivors.
I think, too, there's something to be said for the benefit of the snowball effect, if you will, whereby it's important to be able to leverage all of the work that's being done and use that as a catalyst to get more sites and programs on board. It was a lot easier for me, perhaps easier than for Dr. Sandler. She started out with this work to get Stanford as a third site than probably to get Vanderbilt as a first site, you know, because I was able to say, hey, this is being done in Vanderbilt and at Mount Auburn, and this is some of the preliminary data, and we're really excited about it. And add on to that, the fact that this is all kind of falling underneath the National Lung Cancer Roundtable as well as a huge endorsement and source of funding was huge to kind of break down some of the silos that exist here. And I assume they do at many other institutions whereby radiology is radiology, surgery is surgery, pulmonary is pulmonary, you know, and really being able to say, hey, we need to all work together to make this work. I'm not the head of the lung cancer screening program at Stanford, nor do I want to be. It's being ran by one of my partners who's an amazing surgeon and physician. And it's nice because I can be very myopic and very narrowly focused with my work here with this project and simply leverage the benefits of our lung cancer screening program as something that I'm able to kind of plug and play with. Like, here's a whole treasure trove of additional patients that you weren't reaching. And I get to just plug them into the existing infrastructure of our lung cancer screening at Stanford. But none of that would have been possible if it hadn't been for the groundwork being laid by Dr. Sandler and Dr. Thompson.
I appreciate that. I know Dr. Thompson does as well. We really appreciate the support of the roundtable and of the American Cancer Society and of the American College of Radiology. I think the notion of silos is common for all of us, and it's not just silos of different departments. We call them silos of excellence in screening, where our breast screening program is outstanding, and we think very highly of our lung screening program and what we're trying to bring to our patients. And we screen for colon cancer, and we screen for cervical cancer. And I truly believe that we are trying to bring all of these screening studies to our patients in the best way, but we are doing them in a very isolated fashion. And I think this was one of the first opportunities to really build on the success of other screening modalities and hopefully make it easier for screening participants. We want people to be screened for everything. I mean, this is really a way to stay healthy. And I think what we really try to emphasize with screening is that we want to find something early. We're so fortunate to have surgeons like Dr. Backus who can resect an early stage lung cancer. And ideally, patients do not require any additional therapy. They just require imaging surveillance after a surgery for early stage disease. And once they complete surveillance, can ultimately return to lung screening. And as we move forward and start to look for other opportunities, we are very excited with our preliminary data and how successful we've been in this population. There are other patient populations that we know can benefit enormously as well. You mentioned the snowball effect. What we've seen is not only are the women that we are reaching out to them and their providers increasing their rates of lung screening, we're also seeing increased rates of lung screening in women who have had prior diagnoses of breast cancer. If you are a breast cancer survivor at our hospital, then we actually perform diagnostic mammography so that we can give patients their results same day. What that means is that those women were not part of the group of women that we initially did this outreach, but we've started to see an increased uptake of lung screening in other women as well. And we believe it's because we're raising awareness. We have signage in our breast centers that really emphasizes how important lung screening is with, you know, mammography saves lives, so does lung screening. And we know that patients who have had a prior cancer history are at increased risk for a second primary cancer, and lung cancer is the most commonly diagnosed second cancer. So as we look at the success in women, we also want to start to roll this out in other populations, specifically those in survivorship and partnering with other areas of medicine where we see a high tobacco use, be it in patients with COPD or emphysema or heart disease that's related to tobacco exposure. So I think that as we mentioned, this being generalizable to other programs across the country, we also can now take these methods of outreach and implementation and start to use them in even more patient populations so that ultimately we hope that the discussion of lung screening will be as common as the discussion of breast or colon screening.
I love your reference to women with treated breast cancer too. One of my colleagues just presented some of her work at a conference looking at downstream risks of lung cancer for breast cancer survivors, particularly for those who've had radiation therapy as part of their breast cancer treatment. The elevated risk being more than was sort of historically thought to be. The point being that it's just yet another opportunity to plug into this population of patients who are really at a higher risk, but that don't necessarily fall underneath any governmental or insurance-based definitions of high risk, right? So I think providing patients with the data directly to them at the point of care bypasses a lot of other potential barriers to really disseminating information. As you mentioned, breast cancer patients or even those who are presenting for mammography are incredible advocates for themselves. The advocacy group is tremendously powerful, and we just don't have that so much on the lung cancer side. And, you know, some of that is because it's much older and well-established on the breast cancer side. But nonetheless, I think it also speaks to the fact that there are different populations too. You know, even if you compare, say, breast cancer advocates to colorectal cancer advocates, right? Like, they have been around for decades as well, as in the colorectal screening has been around. And yet, I would posit that the breast cancer advocates are a much stronger group in terms of their power and influence and ability to lobby and advocate for themselves than the colorectal cancer group is. And so if we can hitch our wagon to that advocacy wagon, the sky's the limit, because they're already so far down the road in terms of the things that they're able to accomplish.
I agree. I also think there's been such a nihilism associated with lung cancer for so long, and that conversation is really changing. Screening and early detection is part of that, but also improved therapies and just the greater number of lung cancer survivors than I think we've had previously. So it's more of an opportunity. The lung cancer survivor advocates are such an amazing group of people. And I've been so fortunate to meet more advocates through the National Lung Cancer Roundtable and other organizations, just really so dedicated to increasing awareness and sharing their stories and providing support. And I think we really have an opportunity for that in lung cancer like we haven't had before because of all of these advancements. I think bringing it back to women, women are a unique group in that as well, as we look at different type of genetic predispositions and understanding the increased risk of lung cancer in women and how women seem to react to tobacco exposure differently than in men. Dr. Backus's colleague and partner in the roundtable group for women, Dr. Patricia Rivera, has presented such amazing data previously on how do we understand lung cancer in women as almost a unique disease from lung cancer in men. And so we really have this amazing opportunity to increase awareness and advocacy and early detection. And as we start to understand what high risk means, how do we incorporate a history of cancer? How do we incorporate family history? And we have models that help us to do that. But there is so much more work to be done. When people ask me about lung screening, I tell them, you know, there's really two issues in my mind that are the most important ones. One is, how do we encourage people to participate in lung screening who meet current eligibility criteria and who are currently considered of high enough risk that they should be screened? The second issue is, how do we define a high-risk patient population, and how do we improve on the sensitivity and specificity of the screening test and make sure that the people who should be getting screened, that we are defining that population appropriately? And we know that that's going to continue to evolve. And all of the work we're doing and all of the people who choose to participate in lung screening are only going to help to improve our ability to make this test better and to bring it to individuals that can really benefit.
Plural Space is a joint production by the American Cancer Society National Lung Cancer Roundtable and the American College of Radiology. Episodes are executive produced by Hannah Burson and Beverly Carlisle, with series production assistance by Tiffany Gowan, Lauren Rosenthal, and Kenley Byrne. Editing of this series is by Port City Films. Find more information on this series at the link in the episode description.